Can everyone hear me now? I hope everyone. Wow. So it started as a directory. It became an org chart, which implies that GNOME has organization, which is sort of an interesting and slightly unexplored notion. I was telling the last speaker, we have a foundation, we can be contacted, but that perhaps implies more organization than is really there. So that's going to sort of circle back around to a directory. We're not going to discuss the directory because it's just a listing of names and people, so it's not very interesting. Last year, I underwent the process of trying to build a QA team from scratch. GNOME QA had always been, had had the front end. We'd had a whole lot of people contributing bugs, so we knew exactly what was broken. We just didn't know what was importantly broken, and we had no way to sort any of the tens of thousands of bugs that come in on a yearly basis. So I went about building a team to fix that problem. And so towards the end of the talk, we're going to talk a little bit about where that succeeded, where it failed, what lessons we have for everyone else. The same with the team interactions and GNOME as a team. Hopefully some of the lessons from Bug Squad can maybe apply to the rest of GNOME. So, to the org chart. I've just already told you an org chart is a misleading notion for something like GNOME. The reason is that this is free software. GNOME is defined by product, and product is ultimately defined by code. Some of our projects, like internationalization and documentation, run parallel to code, but eventually they depend on having code that's written, programs that function, things that run. So if in the end what GNOME is defined by functioning and running code, that has a lot of implications for power. Org chart is essentially supposed to be, in a modern large business corporation, it indicates power. You have direct lines, you have dotted lines, you have confusion, but it's supposed to reflect the power in an organization. Who gets to do what to who? So, free software. This is basically our org chart. The people on top are volunteer maintainers. The people in the middle are people who write other code but who aren't maintainers. And down there at the bottom is virtually everyone else, hoping and trying to have an impact on the layers above them, but with the final word being decided by who commits the code and who rolls the tarball. This is, you know, pretty much a straight out of, I hate to cite Eric Raymond, but, you know, there are a lot of things he did get right. And he said it up front, and he said it early, that, you know, working code and rough consensus is what gets things done in free software. So why are we different? It turns out basically we're not. The main difference for us is that we're complex. When Eric Raymond was talking about things, he was talking about his project, a handful of hackers, a handful of users who were contributing on a mailing list. We are, it turns out, huge. And our hackers are wise enough to acknowledge this. They know the complexity means that non-coders actually have a role. In a lot of projects, they're like, oh, documentation guys, shh. You know, internationalization, I only speak English. You know, GNOME, in contrast, has learned sometimes the hard way that all of these little bits and pieces are utterly crucial to making our software work. That still doesn't mean that those people write code, so they have to have other ways of doing things. For coders, all you have to do is write code. You've got the respect, you've got the control. For those of us who are not coders, or for those of us whose last GTK code was 4 years ago, you've got to choose other ways of getting the respect, and basically that boils down to working your butt off. So VSR is incomplete. So everybody rotate your heads briefly. This boils down to the only people who have influence outside of code who can break out of, you know, down here at the bottom we've got this virtually everyone else. The virtually is what's important. the people who can break out of that cycle, who can become more important than, you know, flamers on the mailing list. Not that we have any of those. But, you know, the people who break out of that cycle are the people who work their rear ends off, which I tried really hard to do during the 2.0 cycle and was very flattered to see that recognized. And I think other teams have to learn from that example, that's how you can't be over the maintainers. They're always going to be there, and they are always going to be the final check on anything that goes on in GNOME. But you can earn influence and their respect. You can also lose it quickly. Thankfully, that's not something we've mostly done yet. Enough of org charts. They're not that interesting. So building communities, this is what I did with Bug Squad, or what I tried to do with Bug Squad. Free software is an inherently social undertaking. It is all about the code, but the code is produced socially. The code is produced by people who talk and people who come to consensus and agreement, not by people who are paid to do things. You know, obviously a lot of, that's a bit misleading in the sense that many of us are paid, but those of us who are paid are just bits of cogs in a machine, and that machine is greased and oiled socially. That was a really awkward turn of phrase. Jeff's laughing at me. So at least I got one laugh. But you know, in a paid business, you start from the top of this org chart and you say, you will do this and you will do that. And, you know, Owen's boss, if Owen has a boss, I don't even know, can say, work on a file selector. But Owen can't make that file selector useful just by himself. You know, the Nautilus maintainers, say even the captains of Nautilus, will have to port, if GTK 2.4 comes out with new stuff, he's still got to convince the Nautilus maintainers that's a good idea, because at least one of them doesn't work for the same company. You know, and Lord knows we've got tons of software out there maintained by volunteers, and every time something changes, you know, we as a social organization have to persuade those guys that, you know, whatever's around the corner is actually better for them, that they should, I mean, look at all the apps out there that are still GTK 1.2. We haven't necessarily persuaded them that GTK 2.0 is the best route. You know, slowly we're picking up that momentum, and the social factors are helping us, you know, on top of the technical factors in that GTK 2 is clearly superior. So if we're a social organization and we're defined by our volunteers, why do people throw their lives into this stuff? And just as importantly, why can they throw their lives into this stuff? I was talking to my girlfriend's mother the other day, and she, like a lot of people, thinks that code is this sort of obscure, deep magic, that there are probably about 6 people on the face of the planet who can do that. We've learned through the internet that, well, not through the internet, but you know what I mean, have learned that there are, in fact, a whole ton of people out there all over the world who can do this stuff. And so we have drawn on that body of people to create our software. And what I think we haven't necessarily learned yet is this is the final point here, which is skill set. We all know, well, not everyone in this room knows C, but likewise, an even smaller number of people in this room know marketing. And probably an indeterminate number in the middle know anything about QA. And so we have to, as a community, we can't expect marketers to start falling from the sky. We've nearly gotten to the point where we do expect C coders to fall from the sky. Which might explain why they still couldn't see if they didn't drop on their heads. But, we can't expect marketers to fall from the sky. I did not expect UA people to fall from the sky. And, you know, the reason that you can't do that is skill set. If you have volunteers, we want more people to volunteer. I assume that's something we can all agree on. To do that, we need to hit these 4 points. We need motivation. Mostly that takes care of itself. People get involved with free software because they want to. They need awareness. There are a whole lot of people out there who want to get involved in free software and don't know how. They need opportunity, which is, you know, not just that they're aware, but somebody who's already there has to say, yeah, you know what, you could do this for Nautilus, you could do this for the QA team, you could do this for marketing. If we're just a stone wall, we're not going to end up a heck of a lot better than the proprietary products that we're trying to beat. You know, we have got to reach out to people, and we've got to accept them when they do want to come. And again, you know, it comes back to skill set. Even if we provide, even if the motivation's there, people know what they want to get involved and know they can get involved. If they can't, they're still out of luck. Paid actors and companies, this slide is sort of awkward for me. The GNOME community has tended to forget about some of this. So many of us have been hired, have been so lucky to be hired. You know, we've got deadlines. And when it boils down to deadlines, do it now has very frequently superseded construct a community that might be able to do it now, more likely is going to get it done at some point in the future. And so we have to, you know, my fear is that if we don't break out of that cycle as companies, we're going to do some long-term damage to the community. That didn't really fit in with the rest, so. So where did Bug Squad get it right? Motivation. People want higher quality software. Motivation, really easy. I got into GNOME, or into Linux, because one night, Word crashed on me 6 times in an hour while I was trying to write a paper. By 6 a.m. that morning, I had Red Hat, like, 5-1, I think it was, on my machine, and Windows was gone. So motivation for Bug Squad, pretty easy. There are a lot of people irritated, just like I was. Awareness was not something that people knew. When we started Hash Bugs, there were like 6 of us in there on a regular basis in January of 2002. So we had to, you know, LWN has run a bit on Hash Bugs. Linux Today has run a bit on it. Slashdot mentioned it once. You know, getting those things out there, we like to laugh about Slashdot, but people read it. And that's how you get the awareness that a community needs. And Bug Squad did that fairly well. Opportunity. You know, I was talking with one of the GStreamer guys last night, and this is where one of the things, and someone was talking to me about this last week, they had the phrase, patch acceptance rate. And they were criticizing some of the bigger GNOME projects because they had wanted to contribute to something, and they'd gone into IRC, and they're like, look, I have a patch, I think maybe this fixes this bug. And hackers were like, you know, look, we're working on X, Y, or Z, and we'll get to that tomorrow. They went into Hash Abby, where we had a patch, and Abby was like, holy cow, somebody with a patch! And, you know, and it got checked in that day. The GStreamer guys are the same way. If you come to GStreamer, you're like, look, I got a patch for this. You know, they're reaching out, and they are, you know, it's still scarce, it's still not easy, but it's something that everybody can do, which is make people feel welcome. And Hash Bugs, for a long time, was exactly that way. If you dropped in, I said, hello, would you like to help? And you know what? People come into a channel, they see that, and they're like, oh, well, yeah, it turns out I would like to help. Skill set was the last and sort of the hardest thing for us. There are a lot more people who know C in this world than there are people who know how to triage a bug. And triaging a bug is not rocket science, but it's not things that people ever think about. You know, you go to class and your prof says, okay, you know, here's an if statement and here's an else statement. Nobody ever says, you know, look, this particular kind of crash or, you know, the icons on your desktop corrupted are way more important than, like, this crash that gets reproduced once in the blue moon. So we wrote docs. You know, we sat down and said, nobody knows how to triage. Everyone, whenever they have a triage call, they come to Lewis. Me as a single point of failure doesn't work. If I'm the only person who has the skill set, Bug Squad falls apart. So we wrote triage guides. We've got 2 of them now, actually, because one of them hasn't really been reviewed and checked in. But, you know, you've got to grow the skill set. Just because a lot of people know C doesn't mean that there's not skill sets to be grown there, too. Just because a lot of people know C doesn't mean a lot of people know Bonobo. It doesn't mean a lot of people know accessibility. It doesn't mean a lot of people know usability. So if the skill set's not there, you know, sometimes the usability guys are surprised. Like, oh, on our usability list, all we ever get is, you know, people who don't have any clue and they flame us. Like, well, you know, until the day blew out, there was very little education. The skill set was held by a few people, you know, who are very good at what they do, but they couldn't spread the knowledge, and they didn't spread the knowledge, and since they didn't, you know, what they got was a lot of people without a skill set who thought they had one, and so we all know what happens to usability lists. So where did Bug Squad fail? I'm proud to say mostly we got it pretty right. The biggest failure is personal. I am still a point of failure. And as some of you may have noticed, I've been locked in an office working on XC2 lately. And, you know, that's still, the skill set is spread, but the skill set is still not wide enough in our community. And so if one person goes away, the community is in a lot of trouble. Other teams, you know, to a certain extent have contributed things better. You know, internationalization, there's a whole lot of people who know that framework now. It's not perfect, but we've got nearly 30 languages that are complete. That indicates that there are, you know, a set of people who know what they're doing, and that God forbid Mentos and cameras drop off the face of the earth tomorrow, you know, people will be able to pick up where that fell off. And Bug Squad is still not there yet. And certainly there are lots of other projects in GNOME that are totally not there yet, because people don't know the code bases, and the maintainers haven't made an effort to let people know those code bases. So opportunity is still not something that we're great at. We welcome people when they come in to hatch bugs, but we can't typically say off the top of our heads, Gedit is really screwed this week, please go help them. Internationalization, the DOTS team, they have massive amounts of statistics on, like, you know, here's which languages are lacking, and here's which strings are broken, and we don't have that yet, and we need it. And other teams would do well to learn from those examples. Recruitment's fallen off. That, again, falls partially on my shoulders. I haven't cultivated people as much to go out and do the recruitment. Some of it, you know, has happened, but it hasn't happened consistently. And, you know, this is one of these things. Volunteerism is not something that necessarily takes off on its own. People have got to be there encouraging and reminding and saying hello. And that hasn't been something that has happened very well in Bug Squad. Certainly hasn't happened very well elsewhere, you know. So I'm sort of going to wrap it up, really, with these points, and then maybe open it up for some discussion. We are a volunteer organization. The org chart reflects that. Our experiences with Bug Squad reflect that. Our experiences with programs that can't find new maintainers reflect that. And, you know, we can pump money into it, and we can pump corporate resources into it, but if we don't have the volunteers, we're not going to scale, and we're going to fall apart. So we are, whether we like it or not, and I hope we all like it, I know I do, we are a volunteer organization. That is our reality. Volunteerism dictates our structure. Again, whether we like it or not, the people with the code, the people who are giving of their time, are the people who are in charge. If someone is not giving of their time, or if people are not giving of their time effectively, those people are not going to be, you know, remember that chart, they're going to be in the virtually everyone else down there at the bottom. That's hard to do, and in some ways it's very unfortunate, because there are wonderful people who we could learn from who don't have the time. But the reality is that one way or the other, if those people are not effectively getting out there, or if someone is not helping them get out there with their time, you know, I mean, Jim doesn't have a million hours to spend, but if someone can, Jim Geddes doesn't have a million hours to spend on this, but if someone can help amplify his time, Jim becomes very useful. And that's, you know, so the time thing is something we have to consider. The nature of volunteerism, like I said, there are those four, can I actually go back into those numbers? Sweet. Motivation, awareness, opportunity, skill set. These are the things that dictate volunteerism. All of these things have to be present and ready for volunteers to be there and to be useful. And that means these are the things we've got to focus on as a community if we're going to grow the number of volunteers we have. If we drop the ball on any of these, in the long term, we're going to be in trouble. Short term, we're writing great software. In the long term, you know, we've got to find these people. We've got to seek them out. We've got to educate them. Finally, just the importance of this all. Volunteerism, we can gloss it over. Like I said, we are writing great software right now. It's the usual suspects. It's, you know, it's the same guy. Havoc, how many modules does Havoc maintain now? You know, what huge percentage of GTK code is written by Ellen? What huge percentage of Nautilus are even Alex and Dave afraid to touch? You know? what huge percentage of the Bugzilla am I just terribly dreading looking at yet another time? We can get through more releases, and we can keep churning out software that gradually improves. But, you know, just like code bit rots, the community can also bit rot from the inside if we don't think really hard about this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not just something that, like, it's not something that the release team or the board or somebody can say, you shall focus on the volunteerism and the organization and your communities. Everybody's got to do it. The usability guys have to take the bold step of going out and reaching out to people. They've already done the skill set thing, not completely, of course. You know, no written document can ever convey everything you need, right? The HIG is only a start. But the HIG is a huge start, and it's way more than some of us have done. You know, we all need to, every maintainer's got to think about, how can I bring in more people so that eventually I can stop hacking on GPU, because, you know, or terminal or whatever, you know, fill in. I'm going to look for that from how to remind that if Miguel's fault, he rubs off. You know, every maintainer, every person who's not a maintainer who works on other things has to think about these questions, or I believe that we have to think about these questions in a very important community. So I think that's about it. I hope there are questions and feedback, and everybody goes and thinks and goes, how can I encourage volunteers? Yeah, master, expert, yep. Oh, microphone, so this can get recorded. So apparently I have a habit of misspeaking when I'm recorded, so maybe this will get better this time. I think a lot of that actually, I think that's a problem that we've brought upon ourselves by not educating people. Yeah, the complexity is huge, the time cost can be high, but at the same time, I can break Bugzilla down into bits that anybody can be useful on in 15-minute increments. And there are places in every program where somebody who's got Blade and 30 minutes of and a Blade tutorial and an understanding of the code base can be useful. The problem is the understanding of the code base. If your maintainer writes something that says, look, you know, files for this are in this directory, and if you change that, it'll get reflected here, you know, all of a sudden you've increased cost to yourself, because you had to write documentation, but you have decreased the cost and the complexity that it takes for other people. This was a hurdle that I had to get over with Bug Squad. It was I am so swamped, I don't have time to write any documentation, and so people come to hash bugs, and they're like, well, you know, I can mark duplicates, but I can't do anything else because I don't know anything else. Please teach me. And so it was too complex for them, because I had to say, like, well, as long as, you know, read 1,000 bugs and then you'll know how to triage. And, you know, I wrote documentation and now I say, read 1,000 bugs and you'll have an idea how to triage. You know, the time thing, I mean, that's the best answer I can give on the time thing. Maybe other people have ideas, but the best answer I have is simplify by writing docs and encouraging people to, you know, to get wrapped up in that. Bill.
Yeah, well.
Oh, guy in front of Bill.
Well, I have a question about control or direction, if you like. Like everyone's noticed, norm two is very different from norm one. Let's say, change of path. So, with very large numbers of volunteers, how do you guide that thing to go in the right direction?
Well, this is the reality of it. For better or for worse, maintainers are the ones who make the decision. If core maintainers had objected to the direction we took into GNOME 2, if very core maintainers had objected to the direction we would have gone into GNOME 2, we would have had real problems going in that direction. There were plenty of users who objected to the direction we went into GNOME 2. Someone was telling me the other day that they had had an actual customer rant and rave the GNOME 1.2 was the greatest desktop ever and been all downhill since there. But, you know, those people, if you're not writing the code, for better or for worse, you don't get a say. This is not how companies work. And it's awkward and it can be very frustrating for companies who do want to get involved. But, you know, the reality is that those core people define our direction. And, you know, they have to work out a rough consensus and go from there. We don't have any other mechanism because we don't pay these people, so we can't force them to do anything. They have to be the ones who agree. And if other people complain, they don't have any way to force them to do anything either. So, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing, but it's, you know, it is our reality and it's not something that we're going to change, you know, by hook or by crook, I don't think.
Yeah, Louis, I got a question. What do you do about people who are coming to the project with good skill sets, but with very little understanding of GNOME? Because that's the real challenge. You know, we do have an influx of people who are excited, who want to volunteer, maybe in this area, but certainly we have a lot of people in the building project. But these are folks who may never have run Linux.
You know, skill set, you know, like I was saying, I think maybe that might have been right before you came in, Bill. No, it's okay. It bears repeating. You know, we tend to assume, oh, well, as long as you know C, you're good to go, when that's completely not the case. You have to know GTK, and for some applications you need to know Bonobo. For your stuff, you need to know ATK and all of that kind of stuff.
But I think there's a lot of sort of undocumented stuff you have to know about style, about conventions, about what's already in the toolkit and what you don't need to rewrite.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's part of knowing all of those things is part of the skill set for becoming an effective volunteer. And what we've got to do as a community is document all of that. You know, I don't think we can, because, you know, we have always assumed that as long as you come to the table with C and a whole lot of time, you're good to go. And that's not an assumption that might have been an assumption that was safe to make when we were all convinced that, you know, we had jobs pouring out the wazoo just because we used C, and hence we had all the confidence and all the time in the world. And that, you know, so we've got to document it. I don't know who or how, but we've got to document it.
I think there's another issue there because of the past for contributions to GNOME, I think historically, has always been ground up. So we assume, from the ground up, we assume that people do gradually gain expertise in the whole system before they start adding things before. And that's just to keep an entity level under control. But not everybody who has valuable contributions and skills to make has the opportunity or the motivation to learn everything there is to know about GTK or Bonobo or even the, you know, 20% of the platform. So how do we somehow provide guidance and mentoring for people who have good skills and want to work in a narrowly defined area but are going to need assistance when it comes to figuring out?
That's a really good question, and I don't we certainly haven't had a good answer for it. One thing that I've always wanted to see is a good sample app. Yeah, because even because that's where, I mean, you have to start with some code knowledge, no matter how specific you want to get. And that's, you know, we still don't have a good GNOME 2 sample app, and that should be embarrassing to us a year after the release of GNOME 2.0. Exception to that, right, is non-maintainer code writers. Like, you shouldn't need to, if you can code, if you've got the skills, we should make it really easy to just submit a patch and get it in, you know. And so I think the kinds of people that Bill made, certainly in Bill's particular neck of the woods, there are people with the skills who just want to do the small patching thing and maybe don't want the social overhead. You know, for me, for you, the social overhead is unavoidable. But if you've got actual code skills, I think the social overhead, once you've got the skill set, can, to a certain extent, be, if we do a good job of documenting things, can to a certain extent be overlooked. We tend to assume that the social stuff is important for coders too, because it turns out that's the only way they can find out any information. So. He's making faces at me, so maybe he should get the microphone next. But if not, someone, I guess, oh, well, no, I mean, if he's already got it, then, and Dave's now going,
one interesting thing I think you brought up was about the issue of getting, you know, expanding the community, but at the same time, you talked about the issue of, you know, with you, you know, both you specifically having had very little time to and with, in general, the idea of hiring people into various companies that, while being their supporters, you know, they kind of sometimes, I guess, call it, drag them away from the community at least sometimes.
Sometimes.
How, what do you see as a way that, you know, that can be, you know, made a little, how can people get, how can these companies and how can people have jobs, as Jeff put it, you know, have a life, you know, and still be productive members of the community?
I think that's hard. I think part of it is just that the companies that hire people, at some point, the companies that hire people are going to have to, if the community is going to stay really, truly healthy, are going to have to accept that a certain amount of community responsibility must be part of the job description where the free software thing is going to work. The evolution team has come very hard to this conclusion. You know, they, for several years, have felt that all they need to do is get the code out. And, you know, they've worked in their own little, very efficient and very effective bubble that's turned out really kick-ass software. But they don't have much of a community because their job has been dominated by deadlines, by we've got to do 1.0, we've got to do 1.2, we've got to do 1.4. And every time you set one of those deadlines, that's, you know, every day until that deadline is a day that you don't necessarily work with the community. And I think the, you know, we've got to reach an understanding that working with the community is not just a nice, is not just icing on the job for people who want to work with free software. Like, that it is a mandatory thing, that if you don't work with the community on a regular basis, and if you don't provide the documentation, the community is not going to work for you, and you're just going to be pretty, you know, SOL. I guess probably it's time for one or two more questions.
Yeah, I was going to say that a lot of the effect you're talking about is pretty well documented in the patching, which proceeds, you know, by a bit. And I think there's a lot to learn there. Dr. Roy Fielding wrote his doctoral thesis on the community of the patching and exactly what worked and what didn't. And he noticed, for instance, an effect that you guys haven't gotten to yet, which is, I think, they can learn here, which is volunteer burnout that happens when you get too many volunteers. So they start giving away memberships like candy on the XML projects and ended up with a dilution of the voting base. And so there is some danger in this mass appeal to volunteers as well. And I think it sounds like Benham's doing a good job of thinking about this problem, or at least you are. But somebody should be writing about it. There should be somebody, you know, formally telling the community, trying to build some kind of feeling in the community for what to do next. Without that kind of leadership, you know, it will fall apart.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love to read that paper, and I'd love to, you know, actually get the spelling of that name so I can find it. I don't think we have, for some volunteers, definitely reached the burnout point. I've occasionally seen smoke coming out of Jeff's ears, actually. Apache's structured oddly in some cases, and I'm not sure, like I say, I'd love to read the paper, I'm not sure how much it applies to us because we're still so code-dominated, and we don't pretend to have any processes where, you know, voting matters, basically. You know, we still under, for better or for worse, we're still very much in the, you know, the coder, you know, the coders get to write the rules, and, you know, so there's not these kinds of stresses of people trying to vote and overrule people who actually go ahead and do the work. So, any last question? Assuming we start 15 minutes late, so I can squeeze at least a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
I really like these shorts. I'm not going to eat them. But that can perhaps be discussed at the Zinnian Party in other contexts. Does anyone have any non-pants related questions? You would think, as a Zinnian employee, I might know when the party is. There is a wonderful, very cool drunken monkey flyer, for those of you who are here, that says very clearly, Tuesday, June 17th, Doyle's in College Street, which is a fine bar. I recommend it like I've recommended every other bar I've been to so far. It doesn't really have a time. I know for a fact there's no food. So I don't know what, there is food? Well then, earlier it is. Like, what time did we actually, do we know what time the platter show? Oh, yeah, get real food beforehand, and then 7 or 8, join the drunken monkeys. Huh? Oh. I don't know. Party organization way beyond me. I work on simpler things like, you know, 1,000 people.
Okay. How do you QA patches?
I mean, I don't QA them. That's a code review process. And it's, you know, a maintainer for maintainer thing. Some of these guys might have better answers for you on that than I do. I mean, our big thing is a QA organization. QA or By QA organization, I mean people who read Bugzilla. Our big role is, if we see a patch attached to a bug, we flag it as a patch and point the maintainers at it and say, it's embarrassing that you've had patches in Bugzilla for, you know, X amount of time. And we're getting much better about that. It's still hard because we're not as completely a Bugzilla-centric organization. We're possibly as Bugzilla-centric as it is utterly possible for a free software project to be, but it's still far from perfect, far from what you'd see in a controlled, paid environment. But that's what we live in, and that's what we live in.
In that case, how about
how we have done is for Bug Squad, we send out a weekly email. We say, look, we're all going to be in hash bugs between 1400 GMT and whatever 12 hours later is, 200 GMT the next day. And, you know, we're going to be around, and is, you know, come on by if you want to talk to people. And we send that out to a number of email lists. Like I said, some of the earliest announcements were posted to LWN/Linux Today/Thought. And you know, that's where we got those things out. And, you know, partially it builds on itself. You get communities who really are interested, and, you know, they bring in friends. Like, we have this one school where it seems like half the CS department shows up every Thursday. And, yeah, they're way in the middle of nowhere in Canada, so it sounds like they don't have anything else to do with their new guys. So, yeah, I guess the next people are here. I should probably call it in. Thank you for listening to me.